Hi, I'm Heather.
And I'm Brittany.
We are the okayest moms, but we're also creatives, businesswomen, and best friends.
This podcast was created as a community for the modern mom.
We know you're doing your best despite the conflicting messages that you aren't doing it as well as someone else.
We believe in self-care, mom friends as our sanity, and that motherhood looks different for everyone.
Most of all, we believe that you are more than just mom.
So join us as we talk about a range of topics from motherhood to frivolous reality TV and everything in between.
Welcome to the Okayest Moms podcast.
Hey, Brittany.
Hi, Heather.
How's it going?
It's going.
Are you surviving these cold, dreary days?
No. No, I'm not. I am so sick of winter. I hate January. I can't wait till it's over.
Is that it has been so cold. I know it's just partly more that I'm outside more. I can't hibernate inside with little babies anymore, but it's freaking cold.
It is. It's cold. And our cold is like 50 degrees.
No, it literally boggles my mind how it could be any colder than it is outside.
Anywhere else.
I don't know. It's beyond me. So let's talk about what we're talking about today. All right. So today we are going to talk about an extension of what G. Young talked about in the last episode, this whole idea of finding confidence in motherhood. We just thought that she had so many great points. And as we were listening back to it, we had so much more to say and wanted to share our perspective on them. And we thought that it would make for some good conversation. And if you haven't listened to that one yet, you can go back and listen to episode 2. I don't think it's required listening to hear that one before you hear this one. They just kind of work together.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to start out by talking about our latest Okayest Mom moment. This is something we did with each of the presenters in our summer series, and it was really fun to listen to everybody's. And we loved it so much, in fact, that we would love to share some of yours as well. So if you have an Okayest Mom moment, you can email them to us at hey@okayestmoms.com, and maybe we'll share yours. Brittany, do you want to define what an Okayest Mom moment is?
Sure, Heather. An Okayest Mom moment is anything that happens that within motherhood, your kids, something you do that is hilarious, or maybe something you wouldn't necessarily advertise to the world, but it's something that other people definitely do.
I think I like that. It's something that like you wouldn't tell people willingly, even though we are, but you know other people are doing it too.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so let's hear yours.
So I taught my kids to lie over the weekend. We went to the movies, and beforehand we had some time to kill. So we went to the dollar store and did that trick where we get cheap candy at the dollar store and hide it in my purse. I realized that I had never really done that with them before. We always just bought it at the movie theater because it was easier just to go to one place instead of two. And so we kind of said, you know, we can't tell anyone that we have candy in mom's purse. And they're like, yeah, 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 okay. And so we get our tickets and we're walking through to the lady who's checking or telling us which theater to go to. And she checks in, points to where we go. And as we're walking by her, Sullivan goes, and we don't have to go to the concession stand. We already have candy.
I think where your misstep was that you told them not to tell.
I know, but they wanted to carry it in. And I'm like, no, we have to put it in my purse until we get in the theater. It was too much. And thank God this girl who was working just pretended not to hear. And I know damn well that she heard him. So explaining that to a five-year-old, why we couldn't tell other people that we brought in our own candy to the movie theater was just, it was a conundrum.
Just tell him he's like diabetic or something. Tell him it's for his blood sugar.
He has to have special chocolate, right?
Okay, so mine, this is kind of like peak lazy mom, but So but partly my kids are to blame too, because Nolan is really in on the new iOS update on an iPhone. You can open the camera without unlocking the phone, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
So Nolan thinks he's now Ansel Adams, and at any point I can open photos and have like 300 photos of the corner of the couch. And so he's always taking my phone. He's always walking away with it and like putting it somewhere where I don't know. Of course, I do this trick when I do know where my phone is and I'm just too lazy to get up, but that's beside the point. So what I do when I want my phone, but I don't want to get up and get it, I just ping it from my watch and I just hit the button. I don't say anything. I just keep hitting the button. And of course, my kids being the nosy children that they are, just like little like groundhogs out of their hole, just like ping up and like look around, and sure enough somebody will scamper over and get it and be like, "Mom, your phone," and bring it over, and I'm like, "Hey, thanks.
Oh, you found it. Great."
Yeah, so you know, just a little mom hack for you.
I'm totally gonna use that.
Every time AJ just shakes his head at me, like, "Really, you can't get up?" I go, "No, why? First of all, it's probably his fault that it's over there."
I love it.
All right, so today we kind of gave Jiyoung this topic on purpose, this idea of confidence in motherhood. We knew it was broad, and we knew that she would knock it out of the park, which we think she did. And as we were going through, we just couldn't help but find all these other points that was like, oh yeah, I have a lot I could share about that. I feel like this is the topic I could talk about all day, because I think it's not a thing. I mean, I think you can be confident, but I think you are always trying to convince yourself of your confidence. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And there's always something to doubt, like a decision you made or guilt you feel, or even just taking care of yourself. Like, did I do too much of this? It's hard.
For sure. All right. So we're going to start off our first question here. How has motherhood changed you? Has it built confidence or done the opposite? So I'll start. I can't name one way motherhood has not changed me, like at all. Jiyoung talks about being a recovering type A, and I've been using this phrasing for years, I feel like. I went into motherhood feeling overprepared. For those of you that don't know, I went to college to be a teacher, an elementary school teacher. I taught for a few years. Before that, I had worked with kids in every capacity, almost as a nanny, as a babysitter, at an after-school program. Like, I thought like that it was going to be a cakewalk. Not, I mean, obviously I knew it was going to be hard, but I think one thing I totally overlooked was that at the end of the day, I sent all those kids home to other people who dealt with them doing much harder things than I was doing. And I think I completely overlooked that and negated it and probably judged those parents far too harshly for it, because I, you know, like how hard is it to just say no? Like, you know, you're just, you know, I felt like they just weren't working hard enough. And I think before having, well, I feel like I also have to say, like, my kids are the two most high maintenance children you could ever imagine. And so I think part of it is that you get what you need from these kids. They teach you the lessons that you wouldn't otherwise learn. And boy, did they. Like, I feel like it tore me down to, like, I couldn't get any lower. Like, the having small kids, especially two small kids. I had two under two for a while. And at that same time is when we were realizing that Isla had a disability. So trying to pinpoint that, get her the help she needed, it was just a really hard time. And so I think it forced me to reevaluate everything. I couldn't be this type A over planner, overprepared, control everything and make it perfect kind of person that I had just assumed if I could just do that, like everything will be fine. And it made me realize that there's no amount of overplanning or overpreparing, because the kids always get the last laugh. Like, you can think you're in control, but at the end of the day, you have these two tiny dictators who decide everything that's happening. And maybe if you're lucky, after a little finagling, you can get a little say-so. But for the most part, they rule the roost. So Isla was diagnosed with autism at about, oh gosh, I can't even remember now. She was about 2.5. I do think that my background of working with children really helped in identifying her disability really early on and getting her the early intervention that she really needed. I kind of had some theories in the beginning. She was a very difficult baby, like from go. And I remember the nurses in the hospital commenting that they'd never seen such an alert baby. And she was wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, like from jump. And I remember thinking, like, that kind of sounds like a compliment, but it also, like, I felt like this, like, ominous, like, prediction with it too. I remember sitting in the hospital bed thinking, like, I don't think that's a good thing. Oh. Not that it's been a bad thing, but she was a terrible sleeper. We saw a lot of sensory issues in hindsight, looking back, that other people had kind of mitigated, whether, you know, to make us feel better or because they didn't believe it, whatever. They said, oh no, that's just how kids are. And when Nolan was born, she was 20 months old. And that kind of solidified it for me that maybe this little voice in the back of my head was onto something, because he was a completely different baby. He slept, and like we could just put him down and everything was okay. Whereas with Isla, I would put her down just to go to the bathroom and she would, I mean, lose it. And so I think part of my rough entry into motherhood is also part of me building this confidence, because I think every mother goes through something like that at some point. For me, I happened to get it right out the gate. So I didn't get this kind of like honeymoon period at all. It was just like I was thrown right to the wolves. So everything is so much different now. She got a lot of help early on. We got a lot of help with her. And I feel like we're in a much different place. So it's funny to go off topic a little bit here. So many people told me that you'll see it as such a gift and it won't even matter. And all, you know, people tell you all these things when something like this happens. And I think it's, you know, people don't know what to say, I think is what it is. And of course, me being me, didn't believe any of these things. And at the time, we really didn't know. We didn't know what it was, what it would look like. And I think when you don't know anything about autism, you think you automatically jump to the worst case scenario. But like to see how her brain works is just so fascinating. And AJ and I talk about this all the time. It's just like, wow, this truly isn't a disability for her. I mean, I know it's recognized, and for many, I know it is a disability, but how she experiences it, like to see the way her brain ticks, it's something that we would never notice ourselves. But when she points it out to us, it's like, oh yeah, you're 100% right. That totally looks like that, or whatever it is. So if you are a mom out there, a child on the spectrum, just know it isn't always all doom and gloom. And if it is harder than you think it would be, then that's okay too. Whatever you're feeling is valid.
It's so true. I remember when you guys were in the beginning stages of this, and just how much strength and how much I admire the way both of you and everything you were going through at the time were, it was just very admirable and something that breaks a lot of people, I think. And you guys just, you knew, you figured out what to do even when you didn't know what to do. And it was just I mean, and look, you have awesome kids. I love your kids so much.
Well, it definitely broke us in a lot of ways, but I think it built us back up to be stronger parents too.
For sure. No crying allowed.
Stop. Why are you gonna say stuff like that? That was not.
I'm gonna start crying if you
cry. That was not on the script.
The script. F this script.
All right. So how about you? How has motherhood changed you?
Oh, man.
Your turn. You start crying.
So background about me. I never wanted kids growing up. I didn't really like kids. I can count how many times I babysat, like on one hand. It was not for me. And my three little brothers don't count.
Can I just interrupt you real quick and say that looking back, even after, like, literally every job I've ever had almost has been working with kids. And looking back, I can say that I don't know that I really liked kids either.
Well, that makes me feel better about all the teachers my kids have had.
I liked the organizing and the... This is going to sound terrible, but the being in charge part of it, like I liked that. I didn't, and the kids like kind of came with it. So I was like, okay, you're fine. I mean, not to say that like I didn't enjoy it. I mean, I certainly enjoyed my time as a teacher and working with kids, but it was like the kids weren't the draw for me.
Yeah. I mean, I see that. And you aren't teaching anymore. Like there's a reason for that too, you know?
Amen.
So many amens today. I never really wanted kids. I always said I wasn't going to get married. And then I wanted to live in a big city and have a great job and then worry about all that stuff later. And then I met Tyler when I was 18 years old.
On MySpace.
Oh, listen, that's a story for another time. We started dating and when he proposed to me, it was like the biggest surprise of my life because it literally wasn't on my radar at all. I mean, obviously I had a long-term boyfriend. We were together for 6 years before we got married and we were like, okay, our 5-year plan, let's talk about having a baby after 5 years. And literally 6 months later, I was pregnant. Whoops.
You get what you need.
You get what you need. Yeah, God. So at the time, I didn't know anything. I literally went into it blind, which is actually how I do a lot of things in my life. And I remember feeling the first... So in college... This is going to turn into a body image thing, but I feel like I have like a touch of body dysmorphia or something because I never felt as confident with my own body as I did when I was pregnant. So like, I don't know. I was doing something with it and I was growing this human and it was just like so empowering for me. And I think that was the first time I actually felt confident in motherhood. Maybe the last time. No. But that's the one, that's one of the moments I remember feeling confident. And then the baby came. And when I say I look back on that time with like dread, it's because every night when we went to bed, Harrison hardly slept. He still hardly sleeps. And every night when we would go to bed, I would just dread the night and I couldn't wait until morning. And I just remember feeling like, this is my life now. This is never going to end. Oh my God, what did we do? It was just such a, it felt shitty for a long time. I realize now looking back, I definitely had some postpartum anxiety. I had a lot of postpartum anxiety and maybe some postpartum depression, but I didn't know that those were like things I could get help with. I just thought this is motherhood now. Suck it up. This is what you got to do.
Well, and I think there wasn't as much discussion around that. So Harrison's going to be 8 So we're talking 8 years ago. Those weren't common topics then. And especially outside of that 2 week baby blues window.
Right.
I mean, we, other than, you know, like thoughts of killing your children, I don't think it was ever really discussed. Like there were the two extremes and nobody ever talked about how you can fall in the middle of that.
Right. It's kind of like, yeah, exactly. I just, this is like a recovered memory just now, but every time Tyler would get home from work, I would literally just pick him up and hand him over and then go and take a shower and like cry in the shower. I remember that happening like every day. Oh my God. It was so rough. And I would have really loved someone to be like, this is normal. Like I'm going through this too. And I think that would have helped me a lot. So motherhood changed me in that I knew I wasn't, it's not even that I wasn't in control, but a little bit, because like my emotions and how I feel, I wasn't in control of. I couldn't figure out a way to fix it. So it's just.
See, I identify a lot with that, but instead of admitting defeat, I just doubled down and got crazier and tried to control more and got angrier and crankier, and it was not a good time.
Yeah, it's rough, man. And I think I really feel like everybody gets a touch of that. Even if you have been waiting a decade to have a baby, like if you feel that, it's normal still. Or if, I don't know, if you have to go back to work after 6 weeks, like those feelings are normal. And 8 years ago, it was so different in that people weren't talking about it. But that, I can't remember if I talked about it on this or in Ji Young's intro about how I met her on Twitter. So actually, there was a whole community of moms on Twitter at that time, and they became my sounding board. It turned into a Facebook group, and that kind of became like my mom friends or whatever, because I was the first of my friends to have kids and get married and all that. Like my last college friend is getting married in June, 10 years later. So I was just the first to do it all. So I didn't have any of that. And I mean, as much as our mothers try to help, it was a different time.
Yeah. I think early on we both saw the value in having someone who's in the same spot as you, because even if you do have friends that had kids already, there's nothing like having a friend, or not even a friend. It doesn't even have to be a friend necessarily. Just having somebody to talk to whose kid is also 9 months old and getting their incisors and also learning how to eat solid foods or like whatever 9 month olds do anymore. I can't even remember. But like, unless you have somebody in that exact spot with you, like it's not the same. And I also had some online friends as well that, who, I don't know if anybody ever was on a birth month board. So like we were all pregnant together. And of course these are like anonymous people on the internet who had a couple of them I've met in person and become friends with, and I'm still in touch with a few of them. But like, unless you have somebody doing those exact same things with you, it's not the same. Somebody can, even me might, so my youngest is 3.5, and even to think back with my nephew now, who is just over a year, it's you forget so much. So if you think about, you mentioned, you know, relying on your own mother for support. If you think about how much I've forgotten in 3.5 years, think about everything she's forgotten in 30 years or whatever. So, and you definitely get this sense of nostalgia to look back on it, which is not always nostalgic. It's not always justified.
Well, I also feel like that's a defense mechanism too. Like we're meant to forget the really hard stuff. God. Otherwise it would bring us down.
No, I am determined not to, because I don't want to be the mom that glazes over everything with my kids and like, oh, it's fine, they'll sleep again. Like, yeah, they probably will, but that's not helpful right now when I was woken up every 45 minutes all night long,
right,
for the last year.
Right. Well, one of the, I can't remember, Harrison was little and somebody told me this, don't try to fix whatever the problem is when somebody's complaining about their, or not complaining about their baby, but like, you know, the hard stuff. Just be like, that's really hard right now. I'm really sorry you're going through that. And when somebody did that to me, I'm like, thank you. Yes. So you see me, you hear me. That's all I need. I don't need somebody to be like light at the end of the tunnel type of person, you know?
Right. Well, and I, because especially in this day and age, if you want to know how to make a 9-month-old sleep, you can look it up on Google. It's, you don't, you're not asking for advice. And so I think sometimes our mothers lose sight of that, that we're not really looking. We're like, how did you do it? It's like, I don't care.
Right. I guess that's true too. Because like with our grandmothers and mothers, they didn't have all the resources we do. It's a weird time to be a mother.
I mean, I feel like that probably spans the generations, that sentiment. All right, let's talk about balance. Ugh. Does it exist?
No. I have been working since I had kids. I worked outside the home when my kids were little. When we moved to this area, I went full-time with my graphic design business, and so I became a work-at-home mom. I've done them both. They both fucking suck. It's hard in different ways. Everybody romanticizes one way or the other, and the grass is not greener on either side. That being said, I think I searched for balance for a long time. And when kids are small and you're trying to grow a business and you're trying to take time for yourself as well, like there's just no way to do all of the things, and plus a social life, like there's just no way to do all of those things well. Something has to give. I've written about this before. I can't remember which blog it was on.
We'll link it in the show notes.
Oh, perfect. It's called the 4-burner theory. And if you look at your life like a stove, and so one of those things is family, one is yourself and your self-care, one burner is work, and one burner is like social life and friends. There's no way to have all of those on full steam at all times. Something has to give. So you have to turn down one burner in order to focus on this other burner. So for me, and how I applied that to my life is when I was working at home and both my kids are home, I had to get childcare. There was just no way I was going to get stuff done. And so to turn up that work burner, I had to turn down the kid burner and put them in daycare.
Well, and on top of that, each burner is not equal, because like you mentioned, a family burner. So then there's your immediate family, which when you have small kids has like 1,000 needs before you even drink coffee.
It's a flame. Dumpster fire on top of that burner.
Yes. But then on top of that, you have your extended family, you have your parents, you have other family members. And it's just like, I can't do all of these things, even just within that one burner, if you will. Like, you can't crank the flame up all the way on all of the subheadings of that burner. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I found that to be very reassuring, that there just is no such thing as perfect balance of everything. And when something is going well in my life and the other thing is falling by the wayside, it's just basically a waiting game until things even out as much as they can. Because if one thing's for certain, everything is changing at all times.
Ugh, God, that's, if I could change one thing about anything, it would be that.
Change? I would change the change.
Yeah, I would stop the change. I don't want to change it. I'd have to agree that I think balance is bullshit. I feel like it is a lie that we were fed, and not so much our generation. I think probably our mother's generation was fed it a little more heavily, that they could do all the things and wear all the hats. And I don't think that it's possible. Like you said, I think you can do a couple things, not even well. I think like you can just do a couple things at a time and they're going to get done, and they might be decent. Maybe one of them you can do really well and go full bore on, but the rest of it is just like checking boxes. I feel like I'll give you an example. we're approaching the 100th day of school. And so Isla came home with this notice from school about they have to make some kind of creation out of 100 objects. And I'm sure many kids have done similar things throughout the years. But I don't give a shit about this. I don't want to do it. It's due on a Friday. So like we have to do this during the week. It's not like we could have done it over a weekend, but I'm not doing it a week in advance to have to listen to her talking about it constantly. So I could have turned the burner up on the kids, but I've decided that she's in TK. There are at least 5 more opportunities in elementary school for 100 days celebration. And I'm not going to care about this, mostly because the week prior we did her Star of the Week poster and went crazy with that. So it's like, you are in TK. We're not doing all of these things. So, but I feel like maybe before I would have bent over backwards to make it something really exciting because that is the fun stuff of school is getting to do those kinds of things. But you know what? Grand scheme of things, it's not that important. I don't care. I'm not going to set the bar too high because then next year I have to do something even more ridiculous. And I just feel like now I have the perspective to know that. Whereas before I thought if I could just work harder, do more, and, you know, again, control everything. Like this is finding balance is definitely the area that I relapse the most in my battle to not be so type A. Because in my head, if I can just give a little more effort area, I can do it all. But time and time again, I am proven wrong that I cannot. And it usually ends up with me crying about something stupid. And AJ just sitting next to me so confused about what is even happening. And it never ends well. So I'm trying to be better about that. I can't do everything. And the hardest part is canceling out all the noise about that. Because I've sort of set this precedent that I can do everything. And so, of course, if I pull back on something, there's probably going to be some disappointment or resistance or whatever from an outside voice. And that's part of my problem, too, is that I keep doing things to please other people, but I'm the one that has to do it and kill myself to try to do it. So I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling now, but someone's always gonna have an opinion about what you're doing and you have to stop caring, which is like against every fiber of my being, but here we are.
it's hard. And especially when the opinions come from people close to you, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Extended family, et cetera, et cetera. I feel that.
Yes. So what do you mean you're not coming to the family dinner or whatever? Like you came last time and it's like, well, you know what? Last time really sucked because I wasn't eating. I was chasing a kid around and I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've definitely had a few of those and I've said no and shit hits the fan.
Yeah. But the more you flex that I don't care muscle, I feel like the easier it gets to tune everybody out.
For sure.
Like, oh, that person was mad for 5 minutes. And then the next time I saw him, everything was fine. So you know what? It's not worth it.
Yeah.
And unless you're coming to put my kids to bed, like I don't really care what you say.
So we talk a lot about trusting our instincts. I will say that this has been the hardest thing for me. Me as a personality, I can see all sides of things, which is probably why I get so into certain things. For example, for true crime fans out there, when they caught the Golden State Killer, I literally sat on my computer, watched every news conference, was reposting everything.
We lost like a week of time when that happened. Nothing got done for like a week.
It was such a big deal.
He turned down all of her burners, and the only burner getting any energy was the true crime burner.
It's an important burner. Part of the self-care series. Anyway, I'm just very interested in it. And when it was like this big serial killer who was caught after 30 years, turns out he worked down the street from my home. It just took over everything. And so this is what happens with me. I get interested in something. This happened with the Enneagram too. And I have to know everything about it. Where was I going with this? Oh, trusting my instinct. So my personality is I want to know everything about whatever it is.
It's called hyper-focusing, and I think you should talk to somebody about it.
I'm in therapy. We're good. So when it comes to my instincts, I really didn't know in the beginning what my instincts were. Like, following my gut was just like, well, but I could do this, or I could do this, or I could do this, or there's all these other options I probably haven't even thought about. And so I actually got a crash course in this when we were trying to find childcare for Harrison when I went back to work, when he was 6 months old. We got a recommendation for this place that was like a center, like a daycare center, a preschool, and had rave reviews. It was supposed to be great, but I swear the first time I walked into that place, I was just like, something's off. Like, I don't feel like this is the place where I should leave my kid, but I ignored it because I was like, this is highly recommended. What do I know? Like, this is the first time I've found a daycare. Everybody says this is great or whatever. And so my crash course is in that, like, every day I felt like shit when I dropped him off. And I just thought I was sad about going back to work. I didn't want to leave him. And to be crystal clear on this, I'm sure part of this was my anxiety, my postpartum anxiety. But so he was there for a month, and there was one day where I got there and I walked in and he was just crying in a swing and nobody was like around. I was like, nope. Fuck this. And then I finally was like, this is not the place. And I took him and we left and we didn't go back. I don't think there was ever anything bad that happened there. It just wasn't the place for us. It wasn't a good fit. And if I would have listened to my gut that first week, then I wouldn't have gone through all of that awful feeling of seeing your baby cry in a swing and nobody around to like comfort him, you know? So I feel like that was the first time where I'm like, oh, okay, so when I get this bad feeling, maybe this is something I should explore more.
And well, I don't know about you, but it was never really something I had to do before.
No. Maybe like at bars when you see creepy dudes at college.
No, but even that, like, I feel like there's like a framework for it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
stay in groups, do your, yeah. All right. What we have to think about.
Right. Where, so like a lot of my looking back, like the places where I've learned from my instincts have been like medical things. Like from the beginning, I was in labor with Isla for 65 hours. I think she came out in the 69th hour, because my water had broken, but it was like leaking slowly. And so they kind of gave me two options. So, well, we can induce you, which I didn't want to do because, of course, I'd read all these horror stories about like that will guarantee you get an epidural, which I didn't want because I was afraid of the giant needle, not because like I had this like strong opinion about a natural birth. Like I didn't want to do the epidural because it scared the shit out of me. Well, so they left it and they left it up to me. They said, or we can just wait for your labor to start. So I ended up doing that because I was afraid of the needle. Which in hindsight, had I just been induced, it probably would have been a shit ton easier. And so that was one where I was like, okay, maybe don't leave these decisions up to me. But I kept having to make these difficult decisions. And I'm an indecisive person by nature.
Yes.
So it was even harder. So like, I know you've talked a lot about Sullivan and his beaver syndrome. And so Isla actually had this when she was about like 15 months old. She kept getting these super, super high fevers at like 105. And I would call, and of course it was always on a weekend where we couldn't get an appointment. And we would call the advice nurse and she would say, as long as she's hydrated and doesn't have any labored breathing, it's fine. And I just remember thinking, like, this is not fine that she's at 105. But at the same time, I didn't want to look like an idiot and take her to the ER and spend, you know, $50 on a copay, which in hindsight, of course, is so stupid. But they kept reassuring me, like, this is fine. And then, of course, when we went through everything with autism, like, that was the turning point for me. Because even at her 18-month well check, I had kind of broached the subject with her pediatrician. And he had told me, you know, I think let's just give it some time. I think you don't, he basically said, I don't think you know what you're talking about. And that like ignited something in me. I was like, listen, you won't listen to me about these damn fevers, but you're going to listen to me about this. So I let it go for like a month or two. And I just kept coming back to this point of like something in the back of my head just kept saying like, it's not supposed to be this hard. Like there's something that you're working against that's making it so much harder than this needs to be. And so I remember I called the pediatrician back and I said, I don't care if you think I'm crazy. You know, you're going to refer me to whatever we need to do to get this ball rolling. And I expected to like, I like had like a sticky note of like all these points written out. And he was just like, okay. And I was like, wait a minute. Hold, like what? That was all it took. And so that kind of made me see like, you don't have to fight that hard. And of course I felt so vindicated when she was diagnosed, not because I wanted it, but because like everyone kept telling me I was crazy. So I think that was what solidified it for me, was that you're never going to know the answer all the way to make your decision, but you have to go with what your gut says. So
I love that.
It's not easy to do.
No, it's not at all.
So I heard somewhere once that you either feel it in your gut or your heart. And that, so like if you've never had a gut feeling, maybe you're a heart person.
Interesting.
Where do you feel it?
Well, after I overthink it, I think I feel it more in my heart.
Interesting.
Like that's where I feel my anxiety. So I always feel like that's where everything's coming from.
I know I feel it in my gut because I'm a nervous pooper.
Yeah. There's something to that. I like it.
I know. Yeah. I can't remember where I heard it, but as soon as they said it, I was like, yes, that's what that feeling is. That stomach ache I get every time I have to like make a decision like this where I don't know what the right answer is or, you know, whatever. I was like, that's what it is. It's my gut instinct.
Totally. Oh, I don't want to start saying heart instinct.
Well, you can just say you feel it in your heart.
My heart will go on.
It'll go on. All right. So what is your best piece of advice to build confidence?
Oh, make mom friends. If anything, moms who have kids around the same age of your kids, if either they will confirm, make you feel less crazy, basically, or they will have the best advice because they've been through it, or, you know, they're going through the same thing and they're going to try this. Mom friends are such an important part of the motherhood journey. For me, when you have strong women by your side, no matter what, it helps you build your confidence. But when it comes to motherhood, it has this whole nother layer of shit you got to figure out. That's my best piece of advice.
So mine is, this is going to be kind of counterintuitive to what I just said, but I think that if you only listen to yourself, that will be your demise. Like, I feel like you have to be willing to play devil's advocate with yourself and kind of take in information from trusted outside sources, not just anybody who has an opinion, because everybody has an opinion. But I feel like you need to kind of synthesize that with your instinct as well and compare that to what you know about your kids. I think like the second that you stop listening to anything else and thinking like you've cracked the case, then I think it's done. I think it's like I said earlier, the finish line is always moving. And I think if you get complacent, then like, cause it can feel really comfortable. Like, oh, my kids are kind of in an easy spot. And I feel like that feels counterintuitive to building confidence. But I think once you get in the habit of doing that more often and like seeing that, okay, nobody died. And, you know, that might not have been the best decision, but we survived and we learned from it. I think that builds your confidence overall. And like the better I've gotten about doing that and making decisions, it's helped me be more decisive. I still can't figure out for the life of me when my kid is sick and has to stay home and when they're like on the mend and okay to go to school. I'm still really bad about that. So I'm sorry if I've inadvertently spread disease. I'm really bad. That's a hard decision to make.
It really is. And yeah, I agree.
So, but I think like the more you practice making the hard decisions, which I mean, and that's not hard to do because there's a million hard decisions you have to make every day.
Agree.
Bottom line is that this is all hard and there's no good way to do it. There's no like method for finding confidence. You just have to do what you think is best and figure it out along the way. And there's no amount of control or practice that can make it easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's an ongoing journey. I know I've said journey like 75 times, but even if it's wrong one time, like there's always a chance to do it better the next time.
Yeah. You always have to come back to one. I think like even when your kids get older, like I feel like you're always teaching them the same things and doing the same things, just at their new cognitive level. They're always kids, no matter how big they get.
Agree.
All right. Well, this was enlightening. I feel like I could talk about this kind of stuff forever.
Me too. There's just so much. And I feel like I had so many recovered memories that I blocked out.
Well, let's go back to suppressing those.
I know. God.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone.
If you want to support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review if you like it. I know it feels weird to say, but please do. It really helps us out. And we'll see you next time.
If you like what you just heard, and we hope you do, you can find more of us online at www.okayestmoms.com. We're also on all social media platforms, Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Okayest Moms Blog. Or if you want to, you can send us an email at hey@okayestmoms.com.